Okay, people, let's begin.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Mind for Survival, a show designed for anyone actively wanting to improve their safety, security, and ability to overcome difficult events.
Acquire basic thought processes to help you in everyday life.
Gain insight through thought-provoking interviews.
Unlock your inner potential. Be confident and increase your capabilities.
This is Mind for Survival with your host, Brian Duff.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week here on the Mind for Survival. I am so stoked, as always, that you're here because today I'm going to nerd out on something that I enjoy nerding out on, and it's situational awareness and decision making. And I am going to go through the entire situational awareness and decision-making process, soup to nuts, start to finish, every aspect of it. It's going to be about an hour-long episode, and I'm going to let you know why it's important. We're going to get down into the heart of situational awareness and why it's so much more than most people ever think about, because most people think about situational awareness from the aspect of just being more aware, being more noticing what's going on in our environment. And that's why that's true. That is only one small part of situational awareness. When it comes to situational awareness, actually, that's just the first part, maybe the first half. Now, before we get into it, as I'm still out on the road, I'm working off my earbuds. And so I thank you again for the understanding of my less than the audio that I would like to be using out of my fancy microphone that's back in my studio when I get back to Texas. Now, this is going to be an episode that you may want to, and I highly encourage you to share with people because it's going to give you a deeper understanding of situational awareness and understanding the power that it has. Because why, let's start with it, and why is situational awareness so important? Well, situational awareness, understanding situational awareness and decision making is important because if you understand the whole process of what you're doing right now, you do this process all the time without even knowing it. It's innate in every one of us. Some might do it more, some might do it less, depending on our situation. We'll talk about that, turning it up, turning it down. But we do it all. And therefore, because we do it all, if we know the aspects of situational awareness that we can reach into with just a little thought as we go about our day, and we focus on the right things, we can improve with little effort, not being paranoid, not walking around looking for bad things everywhere necessarily. We can improve our situational awareness and our decision making, which leads to what I just said, why situational awareness is important. Because it leads to increased awareness about us, possibly bad things. That's what we do in preparedness. But what does it also do? Situational awareness sets you up to take advantage of opportunities. It also helps us to have a better understanding of what's happening in the world around us, what's happening in our personal environment, to understand it more effectively, to get a deeper understanding so that we're that way we have more information on which to base decisions. And once we get to the point where we can make more effective decisions through enhanced situational awareness, and we'll talk about how that works here in a minute, that increases the effectiveness of all the things we do, or has the opportunity to increase the effectiveness. So that's why situational awareness is important. Now, situational awareness has been my jam for a long time. One of my earliest memories, for those of you listening to the podcast you've heard me talk about before, one of my earliest memories was the night before my third birthday, and I believe it was 1971, my family's house was one of, you know, the probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of houses in Southern California that felt the 6.6 San Fernando earthquake and it rocked the house. I remember as a kid, it's one of my earliest memories. And I remember my mom taking this big plaster Snoopy off of my, that was hanging over the head of my bed. It was hanging on just one kind of small nail. And I remember as a little kid going, that probably wasn't pretty smart. I remember thinking that. Like, if that thing fell, because my mom made a big deal out of it, she might have said something like, oh, this could have smashed your head. That would, you know, she let you know kind of stuff like that. Didn't matter how old you are. Hey, man, Gen X are here. That's the way things went. And so I remember like, wow, that's not great. So I got into preparedness as a, like, young. I was wearing seatbelts early before seatbelts were cool. When we would ride in the back of the station wagon with the window down, looking out the back, making funny eyes at people driving behind us, I was the kid that didn't like it back there. I'm like, man, why? That big window's open and, you know, maybe we go out. Like, so anyway, I've always been into it. And that's what put me on my path, my professional path, where I became an LA City lifeguard and saved my first life at 16. And since then, it's been EMT, firefighter, paramedic. I was a team leader in Ranger Regiment, 3rd Ranger Battalion. Went on to diplomatic protection, did all this stuff, right, around the world. And all of that, why do I say that? Because at the core of highly critical professions, your life depends, and when I say critical, I mean high criticality. In other words, bad things can happen in those professions, and really bad things, like people lose their life. So you have to be really situationally aware. You have to be really on the spot with it to make sure you're not doing the wrong thing or not doing the right thing when the right thing needs to be done. The situational awareness also impacts, like I said a minute ago, our opportunity. Do we see opportunities are coming? Do we say, hey, I want to have this opportunity, so I'm going to set myself up to head that way? So situational awareness is not just about the bad. It's about having a better life. It's about being more to, you know, as a Southern California surfer kid, it's about being more in tune with your world and world around you. So I spent decades into this, and I spent decades trying to think, constantly think how I can improve it. Like, how does this work? And again, if we have a system to something, and situational awareness and decision making is a system, it's a process. If something has a process, and I say this as a project management professional, that's what I did my previous life. One of the pain in the neck certs I had to get was a PMP certification. And what it teaches you how to do is manage processes, right? That's what you got. You always processes to make something happen. And so that's what situational awareness is. So if we can find the places in the process that we can actually have some say-so in, some input in, some positive input in, well, garbage in, garbage out, good things in, good things out, right? So if we can put good information, good, and know where we can dial it in a little bit, then we can increase our situational awareness. So as we go through this, I'm going to let you know as we go through it, but at the end, I have some focus items, and those focus items are the things that you can work on to improve your situational awareness and decision-making. It's good. And there's not a lot of them in the whole situational awareness decision-making process. But it's good to get to know which ones those are so you can focus on them. But we still need to know how the process overall works. So I'm going to call out those focus items as we go through it. So now, when it comes to the situational awareness decision-making process, that is, and if you've been into preparedness for a while, you know this, the brainchild of a guy named John Boyd. And the situational awareness and decision-making process is observe, orient, decide, and act. And it's more commonly known as the OODA loop. And the OODA loop walks you through this process. And John Boyd was one of the biggest minds when it came to aerial combat and fighters in modern history. He's the father of the F-15, the father of the F-16. He basically proved that these were going to be amazing aircraft through using mathematics. This guy, he was great. And one of his big things was situational awareness, which the early tracings of situational awareness and where it's become a science and where people are thinking about, maybe it's a philosophy, maybe it's a theory, call it whatever you will, but goes back to World War One, and it was German pilots in World War One. One in particular named Oswald Bulk. And he came up with a treatise of, hey, here's all these points. I want to say like 13 points for aerial combat that fighters should do to think better, therefore giving them the advantage of thought, giving them the advantage of mindset, giving them the advantage of reaction time, expectations, knowing what's coming, all this stuff that we get with situational awareness. That carried forward to John Boyd and Korea and Vietnam. And again, and this is what he came up with, was the observe, orient, decide, and act process. Now, I've gone into his process and I've added my take on it in thinking through. A lot of this comes out of my experience with post-traumatic stress, where I had to kind of monitor my situation to say, hey, is me kind of feeling like I'm going to freak out right now warranted or not? So it helps. It can help for a lot of things. Now, the first two phases of the OODA loop, observe and orient, that is situational awareness. Sometimes you will hear people who don't have a deeper understanding, or maybe they're just not thinking of it at the time, they'll tell you that situational awareness is the whole OODA loop, observe, orient, decide, and act. And that is not what it is. Situational awareness is observe and orient. The decision-making process is decide and act. It's two different things that work to make the whole OODA loop, two different that feed into one another and that make this whole process. So we'll start with situational awareness. And situational awareness is made up of two phases, the observe phase and the orient phase. And observe is when we bring in information and we try to detect it, and we'll get all into that in a second. And then orient is when we have that information that we're taking in from as we're walking around through the day, is what do we do with that information? How do we process it? What does that information lead to about the decisions, our belief system, and all that? So when it comes to situational awareness, let's start with what is situational awareness? And situational awareness is defined by Micah Ensley, who was the chief scientist of the U.S. Air Force. You see how the situational awareness PhD level people, they're with the Air Force, because again, this comes out of the fighter, out of fighters. When with a fighter, and you, they are all so fast, and fighters are all so good, where you find the advantage a lot of times can be is, can I outthink my opponent? Can I think faster, more effectively in that? And if you can, by using a process such as the OODA loop, then you can get the advantage on your opponent much easier. So situational awareness is the perception of the elements within a volume of time and space, the comprehension of their meaning, and the projection of their status in the near future. Again, that's Micah Ensley, PhD, came up with that. Now, what does that mean? Well, we're going to get into that here, right? I'll say it one more time, though. I know it's probably bigger than most people have thought of necessarily when it comes to situational awareness, but go with it. I'm going to tie it all together at the end. And so situational awareness is the perception of the elements within a volume of time and space, the comprehension of their meaning, and the projection of their status in the near future. Now, the first half of that sentence relates to the observe phase of situational awareness. And the second half of that sentence relates to the orient phase. So the first half being the perception of the elements within a volume of time and space ties in to the observe phase. And what does that mean? It means you're perceiving the fundamental elements of what is happening in your personal environment. What is happening in your world around you? What is impacting you? What are you exposed to? And elements can be, you can think of it as a car, or maybe you're someone who, when you drive down the street, you look at, and you subconsciously look at the tires on other cars, the wheels, to see, hey, which way is that car loading up to make a turn? So Maybe your element's the car. Maybe it's the tire. Maybe an individual element of that scene that you're looking at is the driver's hands. Or what's he looking at? Does he have a cell phone in his hand and he's texting while he drives? Do I see his hands getting ready to shift that he's going to all of a sudden move into my lane or another lane or do some action? Each one of those is an element. And the more you can get used to mentally over time, breaking your environment down to finer and finer detailed elements where specific elements mean certain things, the more in tune you get with your situational awareness. And the elements we detect by, do you see something? Do you hear something? Do you smell something, taste, feel, or sense something? So we know our five traditional ways that we interact with the environment is sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, right? So does anything happen with that? Do you hear something out there? Do you see something, right? The car driving down the street, I see the driver shift his weight like he's going to start turning into my lane, or I see the front tires start to turn to show that the driver's coming. Like I hear the tire screeching, right? That kind of thing. So what are you detecting in the environment, right? In the observe phase. And sensing is our sixth sense. And I believe that it's not necessarily a sixth sense, but I think our subconscious, which is awake 24/7, always on, monitors the world around us, and it picks up on things we can't pick up on. And that's why we hear in the preparedness world so often and in different places, hey, do you listen to your gut? Did the hair stand up on the back of your neck? Hey, what are you feeling about that? Because our subconscious is picking up on more than our conscious mind. Our conscious mind doesn't even pick up on all the sound waves that are out there. Like there's a lot we don't hear, we can't detect in the world around us. So our subconscious can detect that a lot of times. So, and it might detect something, or it puts two and two together where our conscious mind is tired, we've had a long day, and our subconscious is going, no, hey man, 2 and 2 equals 4 in this case, and now I'm going to give you goosebumps over it. Oh, why do I? Oh, wow, man, I just thought about it and I got goosebumps. Yeah, your subconscious might be letting you know, yeah, that's a thing you want to think about some more. The observe phase is the opportunity, our opportunity to perceive, to view objective reality. So what does that mean? Well, objective reality is true reality. It's the reality as it exists outside of your perspective-filled thought. Everything that we think has perspective baked into it. And we're going to get more into perspective here in a little bit. And so because I have a perspective and you have a perspective and everybody else listening to the show has a perspective and the people who aren't listening to the show has a perspective, everyone has a perspective. Well, all those perspectives are unique. They're fingerprints to us. Because while they may be closely aligned with other people that we have similar perspectives or very closely aligned perspectives, all your perspectives aren't going to match up to every other person. And we'll talk about the human condition. That's part of the human condition. So every perspective is unique. Therefore, because every perspective is unique, no one ever sees true reality, objective reality for what it is. So what's really happening, we're only seeing versions of it. We're seeing a little bit of a mirage of it because we bring perspective to it. And what does that mean? It means that there is always one and only one true objective reality that's happening in front of us. As least as far as we know it in this current state of time until Einstein Jr. comes along, there is only one reality that's happening. And that's the true reality. That's the objective reality. And again, we all see a perception of that reality, an imperfect version of that reality. And it's that imperfect version, again, of perceived reality is due to the uniqueness of the human condition that causes us, that makes it that no one perceives objective reality for what it truly is. Because if we all have a little different belief about it, Well, that means we're all kind of partially wrong. Unless you're the person who thinks you're right all the time. I don't think any of us that are listening to this probably think that. Because if we thought that we were right all the time, then why would you be here? Because, hey, you're perfect. You know everything that's going to happen. Well, I don't need to, you know, like, I don't need to do this stuff. I can just go get ready real quick and I don't need to listen to a thing again because I know it. I know it all. No, we're all here because we're trying to become more better, right? So we go from perceived reality. We're perceiving, right? We have the objective reality. We're sensing what's out there, seeing it, smelling it, hearing it, touching it, tasting it, all that good stuff. This reality is out there. We look at it and we all put our perception onto it. We're all seeing it a little bit differently, understanding it a little bit differently. And what does that what does that do? Well, by doing that, we all establish our situational baseline, right? And we start every day our life. Once we're born, when we come out in the world, we pop out of our mamas and we're sitting out there and, you know, smacked on the butt, screaming, doing all the stuff. We're getting a baseline of what the world is like around us. We may not understand a whole lot of it. Like, hey, it was like warmer and like not a lot more comfy up there. Can we go back? No, we're trying to figure it out. And we establish a situational baseline. And as we go through our life, as things within our personal environment, the elements within our personal environment change, well, we get a new situational baseline. Our situational baseline evolves, right? Once we have a situational baseline, we're sitting here right now, you're listening to me, I'm flapping my gums, all this is happening. There is a situational norm that you're experiencing right now. Everything's humming. As long as nothing changes in the next second, then your situational baseline is the same. And if it was same a second ago, and it stays the same, you know, in the next second, and then the next minute, the next 5 minutes, the next hour, the next day or whatever, and nothing changes, then I'm safe. I'm okay. That's my situational baseline. Our personal environment that we're basing that situational baseline on, the personal environment that we're perceiving to establish that situational baseline, it is made up of everything that is detectable and undetectable within our environment, within our world, within our universe, within our personal bubble of things that can impact us. It's made up of everything that's detectable and undetectable. Again, we don't pick up on everything that's happening. Some things are happening that we don't see, that we don't hear, right? Dogs hear far more, and that's why you have a dog whistle. And we look at it, we don't hear anything. Dogs hear it, right? So there's things happening around us that aren't detectable. So what does that mean? Well, as things happen, as elements do their thing, they react to other elements and they're moving. When they do things, a stimulus occurs. And that stimuli, again, happens as either detectable or undetectable within our environment. Because not all stimuli, again, sounds, a dog whistles, making a sound, but we're not able to detect it, right? So there's that stimuli that's hitting our five traditional senses. Those are external stimulus. Internal stimuli are the sensations we get that I was just talking about. Those sensations, we tend to think that we get the goosebumps, the nervous twitches, all the different things like that. We tend to discount those as like, they're just kind of random things that happen. Well, sure, if you go out here and you might feel cold when it's cold. But when you get that nervous feeling in your stomach, there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. Your subconscious is saying something. Now, maybe it's not the correct reason. Maybe it's doing its thing. But that is super powerful, right? That's an internal stimuli. Stimulus. So I don't know which that is. Stimulus. So those stimulus are happening. Again, internally coming from within us, our body, our body and mind are saying, hey, there's something I want to, you know, tell you about. There's something I want you to pick up on. Or there's something happening in a car backfiring, people making noise in our, you know, from the external environment. Well, whether we pick up on that or not is determined by our observational capability. And capability in general is made up of mindset and ability. Now, these both, mindset and ability, these are both focus items because mindset and ability are controllable. Mindset and ability are things within your situational awareness that you have control over and that you can work on improving. If you improve your mindset and you improve your observational ability, then your capability of noticing something that's happening around you, detecting things that are happening, goes up. Maybe you become better with practice at paying attention to those internal stimuli that your subconscious sends you, trying to tell you that, hey, there's something bad's happening over here. Stay away from it. You know, don't go into that waist deep rushing river, because you probably won't do too well with that kind of thing. That kind of stuff, right? Don't drive into 3 feet deep of water. Probably not a good idea. So our observational mindset and our observational ability. Now, mindset is our perspective. It's our awareness. It's how we kind of our attitude about interacting with the world in some ways. Like, you know, are we positive? Are we negative? Are we being aware? And when you think about awareness, nothing that I've seen is better out there than Cooper's Colors. Right, so you can set your mindset level, your awareness level, right? You have it in the white, which the white is your checked out. Like, hey, I'm totally relaxed. Because here's the deal: as I go through these color codes, Cooper's color codes, and Cooper, Lieutenant, or actually Colonel Jeff Cooper, invented this, and he was a U.S. Marine Colonel, started some big tactical. Shooting and kind of some of the combat mindset stuff back in the day, back in the 70s, he got this going. And so Cooper's Colors, that's where this comes from, Colonel Jeff Cooper. And it's a color code system that tells you what level of alertness you're at when certain things are happening, or should you be at maybe when certain things are happening. And the first level is white. White means we're totally checked out. And the thing about this is we all have to check out at times. You can't stay keyed up your entire life, right? Again, like it just doesn't work. We all have to rest. We all have to go to sleep. When you're sleeping, you're in the white. You're checked out. Now, can you be even more, you know, can you be awake and just, you know, being lazy by the side of a river or something like that, hanging out in a hammock and be in the white? Yeah, you can be that too. Then the next color is yellow, the next level up. And that's kind of just being generally aware. You're going to the mall. You're walking around. You know, not expecting any trouble, not planning on any problems, not, you know, nothing going on. But you're aware if something changes within your situational baseline, all of a sudden there's a stimulus that you detect. Well, then when you're in the yellow, you go, oh, that's something I need to look at. Let me pay attention to that a little bit till I figure it out. And when you do that, when you pay attention to a specific thing, you're now in the orange. You're kind of intently looking like, hey, what's going on with this? You know, maybe somebody walking down the sidewalk has a hoodie up over their head and looks shady. You're like, oh, what's up with this person? That's the orange. You're kind of paying attention a little bit more to a more specific thing than just generally walking around, just kind of being ready. Yellow is generally walking around. You're just like, hey, I'm going to notice if something changes. Orange, you're now paying specific attention to something that changes. And then if that thing becomes a threat, like, oh, that's something I need to deal with. Like, I need to get out of the way of that bus. Now you're going up to the red. And that's, I'm taking action that might save my life. I'm taking action to seize an opportunity. I'm taking action. Now, there's another code that people talk about with Cooper's Colors, but Jeff Cooper did not like this code. I did a bunch of research on this. He did not like including black in this. And I personally like black because black to me represents what happens when you're overcome. A person is overcome by a sympathetic nervous system reaction or a reaction, a fight, flight, or freeze response. And that hijacks the decision-making process a bit. We're going to talk about that more in here. So that would be the black. So that's how you set your mindset. You set your mindset through your perspective. You set your mindset by having different levels of awareness as you go through, as you go throughout your day. Ability, you can increase your observational ability by increasing your knowledge. Hey, what do I need to look for to see something? What do I need to look for to feel my subconscious telling me something? Your skill, hey, I'm getting, you know, I'm over the 5-0 now. I've been over it for a few years, kind of stinks, right? But what do I have to do? Oh, I got to wear reading glasses. Well, that's a resource. That's an observational resource. So what do I do? Maybe I get binoculars. Maybe I get a thermal scope. Maybe I get night vision. Maybe I get something to detect something outside, an alarm system, a sound system, anything that resource that helps me in my ability to observe, right? And my skill at doing that. My color vision stinks. I went outside the other day and there's like red flowers around. I couldn't see a red flower. I had no idea. I saw something there, but like I didn't know they were red. I thought they were brown. So there's that. And again, mindset and ability, they are controllable. Therefore, we can improve our situational awareness by improving our mindset and ability. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Now, mindset and ability are the controllable parts of observational capability. There's one other part of observational capability that may come into play, may not, but that is, and it's not controllable, and that is luck. Luck is not controllable. Therefore, because luck is not controllable, we can't improve it. We can't do anything to make it better, right? Again, our observational mindset and ability, that's where we're working on seizing opportunities by seeing there. Luck, since it's not reliable, you can't count on it. Therefore, it's not something that we can improve. So our goal should be to always improve our mindset and ability to the point that even if we get bad luck, we will still overcome whatever the issue is that we're trying to work on with our mindset and ability. So we're in the observational phase. We're trying to see, hopefully our observation is picking up something that a stimulus that occurred, which caused the shift to our baseline. And now the question becomes, do we detect that shift? Again, maybe it's something that happened we didn't see. Maybe somebody's walking behind me and they pulled out a knife. I don't even know they're behind me because I have my head up in the clouds, right? So I don't know. So is that change, person walking down the street, the change of state is they pulled out a knife as they're walking up towards you. Is that change of state detected? No or yes? If the answer is no, the situational baseline in your world, until something changes, it remains the same. You don't know that this guy is walking behind you with a knife. It's, hey, there's just people out here walking, right? So you just go about your day continuing observing and perceiving. Perceiving objective reality, determining what your situational baseline is, waiting for a stimulus to happen to see if you can notice that stimulus, notice the change of state. Because once you notice it then, once you've detected that change of state, your situational baseline, you've now registered that it changes. And now you must go to the second phase of situational awareness, the orient phase, and orient yourself to that change. What happened? Now, the orient phase, this is when we process the data that we detected, which caused a change in the state of our situational baseline. Remember the second half of the definition, Ensley's definition of situational awareness, right? The first half was the perception of the elements within a volume of time and space. The second half, that's the observe, that's when we observe stuff. The second half is the comprehension of their meaning and the projection of their status in the near future. So what does that mean? That means we're taking the information that we just detected and we're trying to understand it. And the way that we understand it in the orient phase, the first thing that happens with the information we're pulling in, the data we're pulling in, is that that information runs through a filter. We have a filter in us, an information filter. And that data runs through the filter of the human condition. And the human condition that we filter, every bit of information we get in, is based upon all of our individual and collective lived experience, our cultural bias, our strengths, our weaknesses, our political leanings, our attitudes about everything. Everything in there, right? Once we get that information out, that information comes in, we filter it through our belief system, through our lived experience, everything that we've developed over time. And the output of all that, of that filtering process, is our perspective. It's our beliefs. It's how we view the world. It's what we think and feel about what happens in the world. Now, our perspective is based upon three phases, and this is loosely based upon Ensley's work. Is phase one is understanding the individual elements. We spoke about the individual elements. Yeah, maybe your individual element's the car. Maybe it's several cars. Each one's an individual element. Or you're watching the tires of the car, of cars in the two lanes next to you, right? So now those are individual elements. Maybe your individual element is, you know, it's an animal as you're walking down the street. Your individual element is your child listening to the, you listening to the baby monitor while your baby's sleeping and you're trying to do something in the kitchen. These are all data points in our personal environment that we're picking up on. They're all elements. So we understand the specific elements in their, in each of them as individuals. Phase two is understanding the relationships between all those individual elements. Oh, there's a tire. I'm looking at this guy's tire and I see his hands. So that's that, the relationship between the hands on the steering wheel and the tires. If he turns the steering wheel, the tire is going to turn too. So now which one am I looking at more, the hands or the tire? Right, you're understanding how this all plays together. And what that does is that paints you a vision, an understanding of the current status of everything that's going on in your individual environment. And what the phase three is, the next phase, is we take all those understandings of how everything's relating and what's going on in our current environment, and we project the future relationships between all those elements. What do we think is going to be happening 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, a year down the road with these elements? It could be politics. It could be anything. Everything that's happening in our individual environment, everything we're thinking about happens within our individual environment. Everything that we consider, everything is within our individual environment. And we project what's happening now. We draw correlations to it based upon our belief system that we've established over time. And then we project what we think is going to happen with it in the future. What does that allow us to do? That basically builds up our understanding of everything that we know in the world, and how we view everything gets created in that orient process. And that orient process, the observe phase, the orient process, we're constantly learning. We're constantly evolving. That's happening all the time. What does that lead to? Remember, observe and orient with situational awareness. What was the next phase? OODA, decide. Once we have all that beautiful information, then we're heading down into our decide phase. This is where we make decisions. Now, we have to know that whenever we make a decision, we run the chance, we run the risk of it having an impact on that decision of the central nervous system. And again, the central nervous system, fight, flight, or freeze, can hijack our rational, conscious, logical mind, inject it with emotional survival instinct, and hijack our logical, effective decision-making process. It just cares about doing some instinctual stuff to survive. It doesn't care about thinking which answer is the best. It's just trying to get us to survive. And sometimes it takes us over controlling when you see a person freeze and they can't move, they're stuck. Or someone that kind of, they're kind of stuck, but they're starting to move. They're kind of getting out. It can take you over your the sympathetic nervous response can take you over whole or in part. Now, once we understand that, so we can, if we catch ourselves being taken over by our sympathetic nervous system, or we realize that, again, being situationally aware enough to understand that, hey, I'm making an emotional base rather than a completely objective, a completely non-emotional or mostly non-emotional decision, and then doing something about that. So when it comes back to the decide phase, we have four steps. First is analyze the information. Step two is identify a problem or opportunity. That's where we do risk management. Step three is develop options. Well, once we get all the information we need about a problem or an opportunity, then we can go through rapid decision-making processes. We can start thinking about what do I want to do to make a decision on this. And something that we always need to remember is that doing nothing can always act. Just sitting around gathering more information, taking a pause is always a good decision option to develop in certain times. And step four is once we have all of our options, is choose one, right? You can pick the best of three. You can do an analysis, which one seems the best, a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threat analysis. Or if you're really in a hurry and like it's a combination of two, the best of three and kind of my core values, what aligns with my core values? I got three options. I did a SWOT analysis, and this one feels best. Again, your subconscious coming in, helping you out. What's important about that is, as with perspective, mindset, and ability, we run here in every one of these steps. If we work on improving our decisions, we can increase our situational awareness decision-making process that results in good actions. Because at the end of the day, the decisions that we make lead to the actions that we take. Right. And so what happens is we have, once we get past our decision making process, then we're taking the actions based out of that. And it's those actions as a result of the decisions we just made. Now, was it an emotional decision, whole, you know, in total? Or was it a logical decision in total or somewhere in between? What did we do? So again, we can be so overwhelmed with emotion, fear, fight or flight, freeze, and all this stuff that's what we do when we act. We're gone, man. We're out. Having a total emotional survival thing going on, with survival reaction going on. Likewise, we can take an intentional action that's completely intentional. And that says, hey, I'm actually doing something. This is the course of action I'm following. Or we can sit back, as I said, gather more information, or we can review previous courses of action that were in similar situations, all of those to see, hey, this is what I'm coming up with. Now, once we go through the observe, orient, decide, and act, when we get to the action part and we're taking the action, as we take an action, what does that do? That changes our situational baseline. So now what are we doing? We're trying to understand how that changed our situational baseline. As we know that changes, we're observing things that change within our situational baseline. Now we're oriented. We're looking at those individual elements. We're seeing them in relationship in the current world, current environment to us. And then we're extrapolating future relationships out of that. And that is situational awareness and decision making. Now, as I said, with the focus items in here, there are some things we can work to improve on. Now, we can improve our perception, our ability to perceive, but that will come a little bit more. I'll get to that here in a second when we talk about perspective. Next, we can improve our mindset, right? We can improve our mindset by working on our levels of awareness. We can improve our mindset by trying to engage in situational activities, remembering license plates, remembering colors of cars, different things. Do a Google search on it out there and finding ways to work on your situational awareness. We can pay more attention to the hair standing up on the back of our neck, the nervous things we're getting, the goosebumps, the different things our subconscious is trying to let us know. That comes into with ability as well, right? In my case, I'm colorblind. Well, maybe I should go out and get the glasses that allow me to see colors. I kind of don't want to do that, but maybe one of these days I will. Are there things I can do? Can I get a better prescription on my eyeglasses? Because I can't read books very well anymore. So can I get a better prescription? What can I do to improve my ability So that way, everything you do to improve your mindset and ability improves your observational capability, therefore improves your situational awareness. Next, when we get over to perception, and I just are over to the orient phase, we have perspective. Now we can improve our perspective. And by improving our perspective, right, it improves, because what prevents us from seeing objective true reality for what it is? It's our perception. Our perception and perspective are tied into one another. How we perceive reality is often based upon our perspective. So how do we improve our perspective? We improve our perspective by saying, hey, can I prove myself wrong? And honestly trying to prove yourself wrong, seeing and feeling the joy in proving yourself wrong. Because once you prove yourself wrong, that means you're closer to being right. You just got rid of one way that you're not right. Try to prove yourself wrong. How do we prove ourselves wrong? Seek out, and it's hard. Seek out people who have opinions that might be uncomfortable for us to hear. Try to figure out their why. That doesn't mean that you're trying to figure out, like, hey, that you know something high level. They believe this way because they're Republican. They believe that way because they're a Democrat. No. What's their core? What makes them tick at their core? Because when you understand that, you understand why they're making the decisions they are. When you understand why a person's making the decision they are, that allows you to see their perspective. And when you see someone else's perspective, it allows you, if we're being personally honest, allows us to go in and examine our perspective and find out, is there something in there that I can fine tune that maybe I believe this way, but I think that can be there's a better belief out there, something that's more accurate. If I can fine tune that here and there, man, over time, you can really refine your perspective. And that's a great thing. Being wrong and proving yourself right so that you find another way to be right is another way to be more right. That's a wonderful thing. That you're evolving, you're developing. That's awesome. You're getting more situationally aware. Because once you have your observe and orient phase down and your situational awareness and you're dialing it in, the output of that is better information into your decision-making process. And once we get that information, if we can make sure as part of our decision-making process that we gather quality information, that we question the information, that we just don't go out and give into our confirmation bias and just go to the news sources that we agree with, get it from somewhere else. I know it's hard, man, when you watch some of those news channels we don't like. That's hard. Monitor your risk profile. Understand your risk, how it evolves, how it changes throughout your day and over time. Are you doing something different? Hey, maybe today you're going somewhere different. Monitor your risk profile. When you monitor your risk profile, what does that mean? You're able to see and acknowledge risks that are coming and adjust as you go through it. Remember that non-action, we always don't have to act. Sometimes I think we default to, I have to do something. Sometimes just taking a break and letting the situation develop is the best action you can take, doing nothing. And in the end, keep it simple. When you're trying to make a decision, don't overthink it. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't add stuff that's not there. Don't make the decision until you need to make the decision. Right? If you have 3 or 4 days to make a decision, wait 3 or 4 days. That's all right. Like, why does it need to be made now if it can be made in 3 or 4 days? Something may change. So that is situational awareness and decision-making. Now, if you have any questions on it, if there's something you want me to talk about more, please feel free to email me at brian@mind4survival.com. That's brian@mind4survival.com. And I would be happy to take any questions you want, as always. And hey, if you like this show, please go ahead and give it an honest 5-star rating and review. And if there's somebody out there that you know that would benefit from situational awareness, from hearing this, please share this episode with them. So with that, everybody, as always, stay safe, secure, and prepared. And never forget, you are just one prep away from being better prepared. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Mind for Survival podcast at www.mindforsurvival.com. That's www.mind4survival.com.